from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, PG&E says it has reached an $11 billion settlement with insurance companies for wildfires in 2017 and 2018, marking a major step in the utility's effort to emerge from bankruptcy. But fire victims who filed claims are still without a deal. What does this mean for them? Then at 9:30, state lawmakers have passed a measure to cap annual rent increases at 5% plus inflation. It also protects renters from eviction without cause. Governor Newsom called the renter protections the strongest package in America, but how many renters will it actually help? That's all next on Forum. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. PG&E announced just this morning that it has reached an $11 billion settlement with a group of insurance companies over wildfire claims stemming from the Camp Fire in 2018 and blazes in 2017, including the North Bay fires. We look at what the settlement means for the company's ability to emerge from bankruptcy and for individual claims against the utility in this opening segment of Forum. We're joined by Michael Wara. He's director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford's Woods Institute for the Environment. Good morning, Michael Wara.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. We're also joined by KQED's Marisa Lagos, our politics correspondent and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. Good morning, Marisa.
Hey, Mina. Good to be here.
Thanks for being with us, Marisa. This was a major group of wildfire claimants that PG&E settled with. Can you put in context the significance of their announcement this morning?
Yeah, I would say it is a huge step towards their ability to exit bankruptcy, but by no means sort of the most difficult one when we talk about these wildfire claims, which is, of course, really the reason that they entered bankruptcy and a big reason, you know, that they're having a challenge finding a restructuring plan. There's kind of three buckets. The first was the local governments, 18 local governments that they settled with for $1 billion earlier this summer, and maybe that was the easiest low-hanging fruit. This might be the middle path. These are the insurance companies that have essentially insured businesses and individuals who were affected by the 2017 and 2018 fires caused by PG&E. And, you know, they had asked, the insurance companies said, we want $20 billion. This is $11 billion, so much lower than that, but not as low as PG&E had floated even earlier this week in a reorganization plan they submitted to bankruptcy court. They had offered about $8.5 billion. So, as you know, negotiations go somewhere in the middle. But the big question mark does remain, as you alluded to, the actual victims themselves. You still do have thousands of claimants who either were underinsured or maybe not insured or just have, you know, separate claims, wrongful death suits, property. A lot of people, even if they had pretty good insurance, still did not get completely made whole. And so this is definitely, something that I think PG&E executives will be breathing a sigh of relief about, but there's still a lot of struggling to come in courts in the coming months.
Well, Michael Wara, zeroing in on this insurance settlement that Marisa laid out for us, as she said, the insurance companies had wanted $20 billion. The settlement is for $11 billion, so it's less than what the insurance companies wanted. But it's more than what PG&E said in its claim on Monday, that it would be giving insurance companies $8.5 billion. So how are they going to pay the larger amount?
That's right. It's significantly larger, and it's also worth noting that apparently this settlement doesn't include all of the potential subrogation claimants, as they're
right.
called, the kind of
85%.
Mm-hmm. So this does raise questions about the funding plan for PG&E's plan to get out of bankruptcy. They can only raise so much money from the markets, and they can only borrow so much, and especially given that the settlement is kind of in the typical range of what we've seen from large fires over the last decade in California, it raises questions about kind of how much the PG&E will ultimately settle with the actual victims for their claims, and then how that total number can be financed. in the bankruptcy. You know, one possibility is that PG&E is contemplating a smaller settlement than anticipated for victims. Another possibility is that, contrary to what PG&E said in its recent filing, that not everyone in the bankruptcy will be able to be paid 100 cents on the dollar.
Why do you think this could mean a smaller settlement for individual victims?
Well, it could mean that PG&E is contemplating setting $18 billion aside
right.
for victims, which is what they said to the bankruptcy court. We now know that $12 billion, $11 billion today, and $1 billion earlier to go to local governments are accounted for, and that only leaves $6 billion. And victims' claims are, you know, many multiples of that, both from the Camp Fire and the 2017 fires. And and then looming out there is this question, an unresolved question about whether and to what degree PG&E is liable for the Tubbs Fire, which your listeners may remember was by far the most destructive of the 2017 fires, the fire that burned down Coffee Park.
Yes.
Santa Rosa.
5,000 homes killed 22 people in Sonoma County.
And that issue is going before a state court and a jury in the coming months. And so there are two ways to look at the settlement. One is that the resources that PG&E is going to need to pay for the damages from fires over the last 2 years are much greater than they have previously estimated, even as recently as Monday. Another way to look at it is if that's the pool of resources that's available, there's going to be less for the parties that have yet to settle. And I think probably some mixture of the two is accurate.
I see. But $8.4 billion was what PG&E claimed it would pay to individual plaintiffs or was going to try to settle with individual plaintiffs for. Marisa, that was on Monday. Marisa Lagos, remind us what the lawyers' reactions were to that $8.4 billion.
I wasn't talking to them directly, but I do know that, you know, I think that was seen as a lowball figure. Again, I mean, these are the source of, you know, these huge lawsuits, thousands of victims represented by, in some cases, you know, one victim representing hundreds of one lawyer representing hundreds of victims. But they also have different sort of points of view depending on what happened to them and how it happened. Michael Wara talked about the Tubbs Fire and that trial. That was a huge loss for PG&E. They had essentially asked the bankruptcy judge to come in and say, basically they argued state fire investigators said we were not responsible for this fire. An individual property owner was. And, you know, we don't think that we should be held liable for it. It should be part of the books in this bankruptcy case. And the judge sided with victims and said, you know what, I'm going to let a trial court figure this out. And so, you know, I think that just speaks to the complication that Michael is getting at.
Yes.
Of sort of so many balls in the air and so many people with competing interests. I mean, for some people, it might just be about their property. For other people, they have family members who died. And so, you know, the damages in a case like that would be very different, of course, than a property damage question. And then there might just be, you know, I think in any jury trial, you could have punitive damages. So I think they're trying to avoid some of that. But it also, you know, we saw this year, they were not able, for example, to convince lawmakers to even take up this last minute legislation around issuing tax-free bonds to actually pay these wildfire claims. That could come back next year, depending on, again, all these sort of moving parts with different victim groups. But I think that was seen, you know, by those folks as a big loss for the shareholders and the executives who wanted that avenue as a way to sort of give them a better sense of how they would pay for whatever settlement come out, including one like the one this morning.
Yes. Well, I would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're talking about the PG&E settlement announcement today in this opening half hour. It's a major development in the utility's effort to exit bankruptcy, but there are huge questions remaining, as our guests are pointing out. To join the conversation, call 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on Facebook, our website, tweet us at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm going to go first to Amanda in Millbrae. Hi, Amanda. I'm sorry. I'm going to go to Will in Santa Rosa. Hi, Will.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. What would you like to say, Will?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, really concerned about this proposal. I think the folks that talked about this earlier spoke of how it's about half of what was what the damages are. Additionally, I'm really concerned that this is just looking towards a quick settlement as opposed to a thoughtful settlement. You know, the approximation hearing's just begun. Understanding how this relates to future wildfire survivors and keeping us safe, I don't think has been thoroughly taken into consideration.
Keeping us safe. Will, are you a survivor of one of the fires?
Yeah, you know, so I'm a survivor from the Tubbs fire and been very, very concerned about this process. I've wrote a letter to Judge Montali just yesterday expressing those concerns that expediency in the bankruptcy process seems to be the driving force here, as opposed to, you know, really considering the longer term implications of the settlement for future wildfire survivors and current wildfire survivors.
Well, Will, thanks for sharing that. And you bring up a couple of important points. One, Michael Wara, is why is PG&E scrambling to get this done?
Well, PG&E faces a deadline. The legislature and the governor set June of next year as the deadline by which PG&E has to exit bankruptcy if it is to be able to join the wildfire fund that was created in legislation this July, which is basically kind of like you can think about it as a sort of gigantic insurance policy that will allow create a pool of money to pay future the costs of future fires, and
yes,
in doing so, like kind of ensure that victims get paid in a timely way and ratepayers are protected from large, you know, kind of shocks from fire costs.
And as Will raises, and both you and Marisa raised earlier, can this bankruptcy proceeding meaningfully come to a conclusion before we have a court's ruling on the Tubbs fire? I'm going to go next to Amanda in Millbrae. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
My name is Amanda Riddle. I'm one of the attorneys for the fire victims. I represent about 4,000 fire victims between the 2015, 2017, and 2018 wildfires.
And what is your reaction to the settlement?
So our reaction is the same as it's been since the beginning. The wildfire victims need to come first. Will is absolutely correct that that's where the money should be going. That's where the focus should be going. Those are the people who suffer the most from these fires. My other reaction is PG&E put out their reorganization plan this past Monday and
yes,
said that subrogation was only going to be paid $8.5 billion. On Tuesday, they stood up in court, in federal court, before Judge Donato, saying that's an absolute ceiling. And then on Thursday, they settled with them for $2.5 billion more than that absolute ceiling. So it's clear that PG&E's reorganization plan is not the ceiling, that there's more money there for the victims, and we have to work on getting it out of PG&E as soon as possible.
So you don't see this then as meaning that there is less left for the victims, but actually that PG&E clearly has the capacity to pay the victims more.
PG&E has more than enough money to pay all of its creditors.
And do you, Amanda, have you been talking with the people that you represent today? What are you hearing in terms of questions, concerns, or reactions?
Well, the same questions and concerns that Will has. You know, why aren't we being paid first? Why aren't we at the front of the line? Will there be enough money for us? Obviously, that's the concern. Those are the people who are, especially in the campfire, still living in FEMA trailers, in tents, in, you know, in makeshift living situations. They need their money now.
Yes. And as we know, the campfire destroyed 12,000 plus homes, some, and 86 people have died as a result of that fire. Well, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Again, we're talking about PG announcing its $11 billion settlement with insurance companies over wildfire claims, but still leaving one major group of claimants out and still needing a settlement, and that is the wildfire victims. We're talking with Michael Wara, director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford's Woods Institute for the Environment, and Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown. So, Marisa, there has, on a side note to this, there's also been an effort by the city and county of San Francisco to be able to buy PG&E infrastructure. Do you think this settlement has any impact on their negotiations with PG&E over this?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that there's a direct line between those two. I mean, I think anything that is moving PG&E towards a resolution of their bankruptcy filing could potentially play into the sort of other moving parts. You know, PG&E does not want to sell to San Francisco. I think there's a lot of open questions about whether entities outside of PG&E and the city and county of San Francisco could actually stop that deal as well, because under legislation passed just in the last couple of years, we've seen but the state regulators, the Public Utilities Commission, given more authority to kind of consider those types of departures and the impact they'll have on the broader customer base. Because, of course, when you remove people out of the system, that could cause rates to go up for others. So that is definitely a complicated sort of proposal, and one that isn't just up to those two parties. But again, you know, I think this is all happening sort of under the same umbrella of bankruptcy court. So they are potentially connected. Of course, you know, a lot of the questions here, as we've sort of hit on, is like, who ultimately pays for these things? And I think that that's an open question in terms of who's going to control this company coming out of bankruptcy. There are still some fights going on Wall Street between bondholders and the current shareholders. There are questions about even if the mechanisms that PG&E has floated, like those tax-free bonds, if those were approved, you know, they claim that those would essentially be paid by shareholders, by Wall Street, not by ratepayers. But we also know that they're asking for rate increases and an increase on their return on investment, essentially their profit margin. And so, you know, I think that as ratepayers, we're all going to end up paying for this in some way, shape, or form.
And I go next to Joe in Oakland. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. What's on your mind, Joe?
Well, I'd like to know if there's any comment on the fees that these attorneys are going to glean from this these class actions. You know, normally it's like a third to 40%. And when you look at the numbers that are out there, that's obscene. It's more than what the claimants will actually get in restitution.
Well, let me ask Marisa, do you have any comments on or knowledge about the fees that the attorneys will get from the class action suits?
I mean, you know, not, I mean, put them aside. What about the fees that the PG&E attorneys are making? I think there was one article estimating that this bankruptcy is costing $1 million a day.
Wow.
You know, I think that this is part of the problem with the fact that this utility decided to go this route. And, you know, they would argue that they had no other choice, that their bonds ratings had gone had sunk so low that they couldn't borrow money and operate. And, you know, we've seen a lot of hand-wringing on the part of Wall Street around the stability of this utility and whether they will keep the lights on if they can't get their ducks in a row. But ultimately, yeah, bankruptcy costs a lot of money. I think that, you know, arguably that's a bigger concern. I don't know. You know, that's how the law works, right, is that we have attorneys that bring these cases and they do get a certain percentage of it. I think that, you know, someone like Amanda Riddle, who called, has been living and breathing this for a long time. But I think the bigger bone to pick, if you have one, might be with sort of the system we have set up than potentially those individual plaintiffs' attorneys.
And Michael Wara, speaking of the law. Yes, go ahead, please.
You know, typically in past settlements for large fires, the plaintiffs' attorneys have not taken what we sort of think of commonly as a typical plaintiffs' attorney cut. You know, 30%. They take far less than that, and it's still substantial, and they earn a lot of money. I don't want to minimize that, but it's not, as the caller suggested, 30 to 40% of the settlement.
And can I jump in? I just got a text from Amanda Riddle, the attorney who had called, and she wants us to know it is not a class action suit. These are fees, so it's a little different in terms of the structure, and I'm not an expert on that, but yeah, you know, I think that, again, We should ask the global question of how much lawyers are making off this case.
Well, thanks, Marisa and Amanda Riddle, for that clarification. Is there any chance, Michael Wara, that a bankruptcy, that the judge would not approve this settlement?
I think it's likely the judge will approve this settlement. Yes. The bigger question, you know, that this settlement gets to is that, you know, it suggests that the liabilities are much larger than what PG&E has been letting on to date. And if that turns out to be true, it raises questions about, you know, who is going to own this company coming out of bankruptcy. Will it be the people that loaned PG&E money, right, and potentially the victims as well, or will it be the current owners? And how will that process of paying all of these claims and making sure that victims are made whole be accomplished? Where is the company going to get the money? Is it going to get the money from new investments by people that essentially, you know, take over the company, or will it be able to borrow it using a kind of, you know, co-signing, having ratepayers co-sign a loan, which is sort of what they proposed in the recent legislation that didn't pass? I think it's very unclear, but it's certainly true that until we know what that number is, it's very difficult to answer these questions. And so getting to deals with the subrogation plaintiffs, basically the insurance companies like occurred today, and the victims is really important to moving the bankruptcy process forward so that ultimately the victims get paid. Time is of essence for the folks who, you know, are out of their houses.
Yes.
And the only way they get money out of the bankruptcy and out of this company is if ultimately the plan is approved by the court.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze in one last quick question from Marie. Hi, Marie.
Hello. I just wanted to say that I can blame PG&E for the the incident in San Bruno, but I can't see why they're blaming PG&E for this when it was the wind and the change of climate that knocked those powers over. It wasn't PG&E that was responsible for knocking those powers over. And if they were, California was concerned about the vegetation around the towers, they should have had something like California Conservation Corps taking care of that, or either made PG&E actually responsible for clearing. I don't know. That's one question I would have.
Well, Marie, thanks. We just have 50 seconds left, so I want to ask Marisa to comment on that. I mean, of course, this has been the big question in terms of going forward and what led to that sort of fund that the state created. But certainly these questions are going to be litigated to some extent in court and around the Tubbs fire, though that's a slightly different situation, Marisa Lagos.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the campfire, you know, PG&E essentially from the get-go acknowledged their problems. You know, this is a culmination of many things, as the caller notes, but I think the issue is what sparked the fires. And in many of these cases, the answer is power lines or PG&E equipment that maybe wasn't properly maintained or should have, or that they should have known to shut down the power.
Yep. Well, Marisa Lagos, Michael Wara, thanks to both of you for talking with us. And stay with us, listeners, for another half-hour Forum on Rent. I'm Mina Kim.